From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of February 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And then a bit later, K-State's Dan O'Brien will be here to look at the agricultural energies. In Ag News for the day, U.S. EPA has released what the National Cattlemen's Beef Association calls private information about feeding operations around the nation. And a new report from the Army Corps of Engineers says the Mississippi River flood of 2011 caused $2.8 billion in damage. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and other ag news stories. And in just 26 minutes, don't forget, we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, about the weather forecast. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Well, in Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher in the grains pits, a bit lower in the oil seats. Nearby contract for the March soft red winter wheat at 705 and three quarters was 6.5 cents higher on the afternoon. The May contract for the day up 5 3/4 at 711, and July wheat at 714 finished 4 higher for the afternoon. The September contract there at 723 1/4 up 4 cents as well. From the wheat pit in Kansas City, the nearby July contract at 748 1/4 that finished down 19 1/4 on its settlement price. Of course, that is the harvest month for the day. And the corn pit from Chicago, 705 3/4 up 12 1/4. May futures at 695 1/2, a dime higher on the afternoon. July contract 678 1/4, 6 3/4 higher. And September at 578 3/4, up 6 3/4. December corn, 555 3/4, up 5 1/2 cents. The March contract at 566, up 5 1/4 for the day. March soybeans at 1448 1/2, down 2 3/4. The May at 1433, down 2 1/4. And July 3 cents lower at $14.19. August soybeans at 1377 1/4, down 4 1/4. In November, 1258 3/4, down 6 3/4. Bean meal, the March contract, 427.70, up $2.10. Bean oil at 49.02, down $1.05 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at 129.38, 7 1/2 cents higher. April feeders at 144.25, up 32 1/2, and lean hogs were 70 cents higher. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. April contracted $92.53 a barrel, down 57 cents, that is. The RBOB gasoline at 298.6, that's 7.5 cents lower. The ethanol at 239.2, up 2 1/10 of a cent. And the difference between the two, now 59 4/10 of a cent, as the spread narrows dramatically today, coming in 9.5 cents. Natural gas at 342.7, a penny and 3/10 of a cent higher for the afternoon. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.03 1/10 of a cent. That's 6 7/10 of a cent lower for the day. Gold futures at $1,615, $28.90 higher. And the U.S. dollar at 81.87. That's up 0.2 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes for the Urbana-Champaign area. In the National Weather Service forecast, rain before 3 o'clock this afternoon, then rain, snow, sleet. A high of 36 degrees on a northeast wind at 11 to 17 miles an hour. And then this evening, we'll see snow showers likely in the area, cloudy, a low of 30 degrees. And as we make through our way through tomorrow, snow showers continue, cloudy, a high of 34, northwest winds at 11 to 16. Wednesday evening, a 40% chance of snow showers, cloudy, a low of 29. And Thursday, a chance of flurries, cloudy and 36. Thursday night, mostly cloudy, and a low of 25 degrees. Friday, mostly cloudy skies and 33. Friday night, mostly cloudy and 21. Saturday, partly sunny and 32 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of February, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line with us today. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Well, tell me first, Wayne, about what the marketplace looks like to you today and what you think will happen through the evening hours tonight and then again tomorrow, please. Oop, it looks like Wayne is not with us at the moment. Let's see if he's there. Hey, Wayne, are you on this side? Well, it appears Wayne's not there at the moment. That's no big deal. I'm not quite certain why that would be the case, but we'll catch up with him in just a bit, see what we can find out, and I'll see what I can do about finding where Wayne went to today.
Hello. I can hear him, but he couldn't hear me. He put me on the wrong hold button.
Well, it looks like Wayne is actually there. He's just on hold in a different place than usual. Hi, Wayne. How are you today?
Hey, how's Todd today?
Oh, I'm really good. Thank you so much. On this, 26th day of February, tell me about the marketplace.
Well, first off, I'm all excited about next Tuesday when we get to meet all of our good listeners at the Beef House, Todd. It's just an exciting time coming up, and I'm just awfully excited about that, and I'm excited about having a green in the corn today. We saw a little bit of rebound. We saw continued bull spreading, pushing the nearby a little higher than the next months and the deferreds down the road on the very tightness of the corn situation.
And next week will be a lot of fun. We'll have a whole bunch of folks that we'll need to talk to. John Bondurant should be up here. Murray Wise will be here to talk about land values, all kinds of things happening. By the way, did you know that we only have, I think this morning Dave said 18, and I haven't checked to see how many left, but not many, and we'll stop selling those tickets tomorrow afternoon. So if you need one or want one, 217-333-7300 is the number to call, and I think this is, the 23rd annual, if I remember correctly.
I believe that's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should be a lot of years we've been doing this together.
Should be a great show. Okay, let's get back to the marketplace. I know you've been watching it, and you've been busy doing other things as well. Farmers just need to wait it out now at this point to see what the final numbers are for crop insurance and then take that as a marketing plan and then step back into the market again?
I think that's probably a very good idea, Todd. I mean, we've got just a couple more days, and we're going to know what their guarantees are going to be. But we are looking for rallies to sell this corn market. The government meeting there last week that, you know, projected a very, very big carryout. And, you know, we are getting snow, rain, whatever. We're replenishing moisture here. So it looks like we got a little better chance than what we maybe did, you know, a month ago when we were looking at a lot of drought conditions.
Yeah, tell me about the soybeans and how you see that playing out over the next week.
Well, I think the soybeans are, as we look down to South America, it looks like they're going to come through and have their crop there for us. We are having a lot of problems as far as shipping and whatever goes along the way down that way. But we're also looking for some bumps in the bean market to maybe make some sales for new crop.
I know that you've been working through the crop insurance. What do you see in crop insurance that seems to be like the best things farmers might consider this time?
Well, I think, you know, if we looked at the University of Illinois' recommendations, they still like the GRIP policy. And mm-hmm. if we are going to have a drought, that is, of course, the biggest pain policy of the bunch.
But speaking of which, did you see those numbers that came out today on FarmDoc's site?
I did not. I've been tied up with some adjusters.
Yes,
or something.
You have. I've had that map for about a week now, but if you, I think it should be on the FarmDoc Daily website. But the numbers are enormous, $800, $900, $1,200 an acre. In some places, there are a few counties though that didn't catch anything up in the far northwestern corner of the state.
I was going to say, I don't think Northern Illinois fared quite as well, but they fared a lot better come harvest time last year.
Indeed they did. Anything else that we ought to talk about before I let you go?
That's about it today, Todd.
All right. Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming and a brand new way to listen to it. The website's been updated. If you haven't been there recently, go try it out and try it out on your smartphone and your tablet and right there on your PC. Should you adjust to everything? It's a WILLAG.org. Dave Dickey is here now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has released what the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is calling proprietary and personal information to environmental groups about animal feeding operations of all sizes in response to a Freedom of Information Act request. EPA officials say they did not consider the information to be proprietary. NCBA learned about the release during a meeting with agency officials. That information release included feeding operations of all sizes, even smaller operations not regulated by the Clean Water Act. The information was released to Pew Charitable Trust, the National Resources Defense Council, and Earth Justice. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security also expressed concern that the information could threaten the U.S. food system. A new report from the Army Corps of Engineers says the Mississippi River flooding of 2011 caused $2.8 billion in damage. The report from the Corps said the flood hit 119 counties in the lower Mississippi River states of Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee. More than 21,000 homes and businesses and 1.2 million acres of agricultural land were affected. Nearly all of the levee or flood wall systems also experienced some damage. A new AP economic survey of 37 economists says that the political standoff over the U.S. budget is slowing the U.S. economy, more so than any hesitancy by Americans to spend freely. The consensus emerged just as the budget impasse in Washington is about to trigger automatic spending cuts across the economy. The survey also says that the economy will grow 2.2% this year, and growth should increase in 2014 to 2.9%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, it's time to define a marketing term, commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets. Elaine Cubb joins us. Of course, she believes the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices of the industry. Today, she helps us define a futures strategy. Thank you so much for taking the time, Elaine. Tell me what futures are and what a strategy might be within them.
Well, a futures contract is just a financial instrument that's traded at an exchange. Usually when we talk about grain contracts, we're talking about the Chicago Board of Trade, which is operated by the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the CME Group. And it's just a financial asset. So it's really just a piece of paper that represents the price of a commodity, let's say, at some point in the future. So when we talk about how farmers, for instance, or anyone in the agriculture industry uses a futures contract in their strategies, they're sometimes using them as a hedge. So it's a financial substitute for an actual sale or purchase of the actual physical commodity. And speculators, so investors, people who are trying to make money from futures contracts, are just trading them like any other asset. They're buying them in the hope that prices go up or selling them in the hope that prices go down. So the strategies are very basic trading or hedging strategies.
Well, let's talk about a couple of things that differ between a cash sale and taking a futures position. One of them is called margin.
Yes. So if you just sell your grain with a cash sale, you know, it seems very simple, right? You just write a contract that you're going to deliver grain at some point in the future. It doesn't cost you anything. You never really have to think about it. It is costing you opportunity costs throughout time. If the price goes up, you don't have the opportunity to sell again at that higher price, but you don't really have to think about it. You know, that doesn't really, you don't have to write a check or feel any actual, you know, financial pain. A futures contract strategy is different. So if you sell a futures contract and then the price goes up, it will cost you money. In your trading account, you'll have a brokerage account and you will actually be losing penny for penny as the price goes against you. And so you'll have to write a check, come up with real actual cash to cover that loss. And in the meantime, even if you don't lose, even if your strategy turns out to be profitable and you're making money in your brokerage account, you still have to come up with some cash. It costs you something upfront. You have to put up some upfront money called margin. Initial margin that will just cover your losses in case the position doesn't make a profit. So there's always some sort of cost initially with making a futures trade.
And what's the difference in a hedge and a spec account or a speculative trade in the futures market?
Well, the exchanges do a nice job of recognizing that people who are using the futures markets as a hedge do have some financial asset backing it up on the other side. So they're not as likely to, let's say, go bankrupt and just blow out of their margin entirely. So they allow them to pay a slightly less earnest, you know, in good faith money up front. They have smaller margin requirements up front than speculators do.
And then if you could tell me, are there different margin requirements depending on what kind of an account you have, whether that might be a hedge account or a speculative account or some other form?
The CME has something called a Standard Portfolio Analysis of Risk. That's SPAN. They do this calculation to come up with a number of how much the market might change over the next couple of weeks, let's say, or how much they think it might be possible that you could lose. And they want that money, you know, in good faith that they can hold on to. And that's what they ask for from speculators. It can be something like, let's say, the equivalent of a 50-cent move in corn. But for hedgers, they have to come up with maybe, let's say, half of that, just because they know that there is a physical commodity backing up that position.
Which speculative future strategies have more efficient margin requirements?
Well, here's the other thing that the CME group does, and most of these exchanges do, in order to recognize the less risk of some strategies. A spread strategy, so where you might be buying March corn and simultaneously selling May corn, for instance, and what you're really trading is the difference in price between those two contracts. A strategy like that, they give you a fairly sizable margin credit. You only have to come up with, I'd say, about a tenth of the initial margin for a spread strategy as you do for just a straight speculative play, long or short, in the corn market.
So that's a much more efficient use of your margin money then.
Yeah, you really don't have to come up with as much money up front to sit around in your trading account. Whereas if you're just trading long or short, you've got to have a pretty sizable chunk of cash just parked in your brokerage account, not earning interest, you know, not really doing much for you unless the position itself wins.
On the topic of money, in recent years, MF Global and PFG have gone under and customers have had some problems with the money they've invested through those companies. Is the money safe?
Those are really disastrous examples, but they're rare examples. For the most part, most people trading futures, most companies, most brokerages handling customers' funds are doing it correctly. They segregate the customers' funds away from their own business so that even if their business goes bankrupt, the customers' funds are supposed to be safe. But yeah, you bring up MF Global, PFG. Those are examples. We've talked in the past about counterparty risk of trading cash grain. There is also always counterparty risk of putting your cash in the hands of a brokerage firm that may be doing something fraudulent. And that happened and people, you know, really got hurt. And so I think that the industry is more cognizant or more aware about that counterparty risk, and you do see some elevators, for instance, taking their margin, any extra margin money, they don't just leave it parked with their brokerage, or they diversify with more than one brokerage. And another good reason not to keep margin money parked with the brokerage is, like I said, they don't pay interest on it. There's no particularly good motivation to just keep cash parked with them. So it's certainly something to think about. But like I said, generally speaking, the laws are in place and the brokerages do handle, for the most part, customer funds very well.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Elaine Cubb is a commodity broker and analyst and author of Mastering the Grain Markets. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Well, on this Tuesday afternoon, let's take a look at the agricultural energy markets. On the phone line, Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State University and is an Extension agricultural economist. Thanks for taking the time with us, Dan. Let's talk a little bit about ethanol, if we could, for the afternoon. We'll take up first what the ethanol market looks like at this point and what your considerations are given USDA's numbers last week.
USDA numbers. The USDA numbers came out more conservative than many market analysts, including myself, had thought, and I think they were basing their analysis, no doubt, on a questionable or worrisome fuel demand and usage. Really, it's kind of a battle or a disagreement that we'll have to see play out in the markets between the impacts of a blend wall on the one hand versus the potential expansion of into E15 usage exports and other what low prices might do to help spur on ethanol production. I really think as you look at our U.S. ethanol industry, again, there are articles out today that seem to verify what the numbers are saying. We have about 20 plants out of the 211 or so here in the country that are idled right now. And so approximately 10% of the production capacity is sitting, not used. We produced about 13.3 billion gallons of ethanol in 2012. And as we move forward, is there, I guess, this battleground of economics that we'll be watching in terms of ethanol plant usage of corn will be playing itself out again? Will the blend wall issues come into play, or will the expansion of the blend wall and exports, as we've talked about, come in and help us to reverse the downward trend in U.S. corn ethanol usage and ethanol production use? So big challenges to consider.
One of the things that an ethanol plant makes money on is not only the ethanol that it produces, but the DDGs. How does the price of DDG and the corn price and all that work together?
If you look at what's happened since August of last year, of course, we had a spike higher when corn got up to $8.15 per bushel up in Iowa, and DDGs were up to just under $300, about $299 a ton. Since then, we've come down on the price of corn to $7.30, and price of distillers grains down to 267 both at either 10.7% drop. So they both come down about the same, and the relative percentages of the contribution to the revenue side hasn't changed that much. Again, corn producing contributing about 74% of the revenue to the ethanol enterprise, and DDGs is about 26. Still, it's very imposing to stand back, Todd, and look and see what's happened in terms of the length of time that we've seen losses in that industry. We've seen losses on a monthly basis, arguably since January of 2012, and an average over that time frame of about 10 cents per gallon loss on ethanol produced. And that's no small thing to have to overcome and wrestle with.
Well, they seem to have been doing it for a while. I guess we'll have to figure out whether they can do it for another few months or not. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today, Dan.
Have a great day, Todd. We'll see
you. You too. Dan O'Brien was with K-State University, where he serves as an ag economist and U of I and K-State Extension Service. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
It's National Pistachio Day. No one knows why the day is celebrated in February. Pistachios are actually harvested in the U.S. in September. It's said that individuals who stand among pistachio trees and hear ripening fruit pop open will have good luck and fortune. On this day in agricultural history in 1852, John Harvey Kellogg was born. He was a surgeon, vegetarian, and health food pioneer. While superintendent at the Battle Creek Sanitarium, he developed the first breakfast cereals for his patients, flaked wheat and toasted cornflakes. His brother, William W. Kellogg, founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflakes Company to produce cornflakes for sale to the public. In 1895, Michael Joseph Owens of Toledo, Ohio, patented an automatic glass-blowing machine that could make multiple bottles at the same time. It was a big advance in bottle making. He eventually founded the Owens Bottle Machine Company and the Libby Owens Glass Company. The company specializes in glass for aircrafts, cars, trains, and, of course, cooking utensils. In 1903, Richard Jordan Gatling died. Before inventing the Gatling gun, he was instrumental in agriculture. He developed a machine for sowing rice, wheat, and other grains and invented a steam plow, what we would today call a tractor. He also invented a process for steam cleaning raw wool and a wheat drill. Much of the manufacture of Gatling's ag imports occurred in St. Louis. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, is on the phone line with us to take up the weather forecast. It looks kind of ugly, but not as bad as it could have been should the temperature be lower for this afternoon and this evening. What can you tell me about the weather making its way through the Midwest at this time?
Well, it's a system that probably has reached its peak strength, but we're going to see some good rains fall across the southern parts of the storm, across the central southern areas of the Corn Belt on the northern end, snow across many areas of the Great Lakes, a little bit of rain and sleet mixed in with that as well. This system is going to work its way out here over the next 24 to 48 hours, and the focus will then shift with the system more into the mid-Atlantic and the northeast United States. But as you mentioned here, a little bit ugly out there, kind of soupy, but boy, is it good to see precipitation. This storm took a path in some of the real hard-hit drought areas and the real dry areas of the western high plains. This is the second major storm within a week to go through some of the worst drought areas of the western plains.
I know it takes some time to recover from drought. How much rainfall do you expect this storm will drop in those areas, and what was the previous storm number?
Well, the first storm brought anywhere, the highest amounts of liquid equivalent of the snow was an inch to an inch and a half over a large portion of Kansas, a large portion of Nebraska. The second storm brought 1 to 2 inches of water equivalent in the form of snow and rain to many areas of Oklahoma, southeast Kansas. The Texas Panhandle, this is a top five blizzard for February for Amarillo, and a storm they'll remember for a long time. So, you know, there are areas of those drought locations that are 10 inches behind normal, but there are some areas that received 2 inches. So that took a bit of a bite out of the drought. It's an elephant. We can only eat it one bite at a time, but that was a pretty good bite.
Is there another storm in the near future?
There is. This pattern that we're in right now looks like it's going to go right on into March. So we're going to be looking at many of the other areas having more opportunities for precipitation. That includes the Corn Belt, many areas of the southeast, some of the drought areas around Georgia, some of the southeast United States, they're seeing that easing as well. It's going to be a busy weather pattern here across the lower 48, at least for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Can you tell me when those storms are due, or at least when the next one is due?
2 or 3 days spacing is the best way to describe it. So once the system goes by 48 to 72 hours, you're going to have the next one.
Oh, that is a nice change from the dry, dry weather we had in 2012. 2013 is looking a lot better at this time then.
It really is. In fact, when you take a look at least from what we're expecting in the month of March, it's almost a complete opposite of March 2012.
Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for this agricultural weather report comes from Busey. Busey believes that healthy businesses strengthen our local economy. They have a commercial banking team with 20-plus years of experience providing lending solutions to meet unique business needs. Busey, your dream, our promise.